You were talking there on the porch about the Cole Gifford.
Yeah.
And how, you know, that they were a generation apart. Don't know if they knew each other.
Yeah, well, you know, I was just saying that for 3 years, from 1845, when Gifford, you know, went down to New York City and trained with a portrait painter at first, but began to, you know, make himself familiar in the, you know, National Academy of Design and places like that, you know, the clubs of New York City. I want to believe, you know, I mean, it's they must have intersected, if not necessarily up here. You know, I think at that point, you know, Gifford was, compared to other artists of his generation, like Jasper Cropsey, who actually came here after Cole's death and, you know, interviewed his widow. Gifford was sort of shy. So he is, you know, I unlikely that he made some kind of pilgrimage to, you know, visit Cole and that sort of thing. While we don't have documentation of him actually meeting Cole, the likelihood of them having crossed paths, especially when Gifford made his decision to become a landscape painter, and the likelihood that they crossed paths in New York City seems great, you know. The important thing, however, is what Gifford himself testified in 1874, 6 years before he died. And that was, you know, his ventures, his forays into the Catskill Mountains on sketching tours, also in the Berkshires, in combination with what he called his admiration of the works of Thomas Cole, was what seemed to fasten him on his path. That little story I told about him being up on Mount Marina was something said at his eulogy by Worthington Whitridge's friend. And it may have been a bit embroidered, you know, looking down on Cole's house and becoming, you know, deciding to become a landscape painter. But it's fair to say that Gifford himself testified to how critical Cole's works were to him, you know, settling on his career.
Did these fellows inspire a lot of others? Were there many, I don't want to say imitators, but many who decided to try and follow in that vein and do the landscape paintings?
Yes, I mean, you know, look, Cole, Thomas Cole and Asherby Durand, you know, that pair of figures, more or less contemporary, constituted, you know, virtually the whole first generation of what we, you know, termed the Hudson River School. But Gifford had many artists, you know, into whose society he joined. Aspiring to be landscape painters. I talked about Jasper Cropsey coming here to, you know, do a pilgrimage to Cole's house. There were other painters who knew Cole quite well and, you know, visited him here at Cedar Grove, you know, during the latter part of his life. I mean, you know, the marketplace for Hudson River School Out has settled somewhat in recent years, but there are, you know, there are many, many painters. I can't give you a number, but and it's because landscape painting in America was, you know, it reflected what I think Americans were most proud of, their real estate, you know. It was, in a way, sanitary. No nudes, you know, that sort of thing. Landscape was a safe subject to that society, that antebellum society. So there was a marketplace for it. And, you know, part of the decision of these younger painters, these followers of Cole, was, you know, a commercial one. I can sell my work. Now, and they had varying degrees of success. I don't want to say that they all, you know, but... You know, there was that attraction as well as, you know, the example of Cole and, you know, the subject matter that was just about everywhere you wanted to look. And, you know, respecting that subject matter, you know, it's probably fair to say that, you know, we talk of American wilderness, but by the time especially the second generation got going, you know, the railroad transportation made visiting places, you know, natural places as resorts, extremely attractive to affluent Americans. And we're talking about, you know, Conway in New Hampshire and Newport in Rhode Island and the highlands of the Hudson and the Catskill Mountains. And all of these places, resorts were formed within them to attract people from the city. Landscape pursuit, you know, simply walking in the landscape, was kind of like a derivation of something that had begun in England in the 18th century, you know, picturesque tour. And so there's your marketplace for this band of painters working in New York City to sell their works to, into.
I'd love to go back in time and stick a microphone in Mr. Gifford and say, hey, what do you think of this photography stuff? You think that'll ever catch on?
You know, look, a few Hudson River School painters are known to have actually incorporated photographs into the design of their works. You know, I was just working on a big picture of the Parthenon by Frederick Church, and among, you know, it was known that he probably went to photographs as references, but what wasn't known was that, you know, photography, which was invented in, what, 1839 with the daguerreotype, you know, was concurrent with the liberation of Greece and the clearing of the Acropolis. So almost the first pictorializers who got up on top of the Acropolis and, you know, did that big building, you know, did the Parthenon. And they always did it from the same angle because the architects had planned you to experience that building when you came up the Acropolis, you know, from that point of view. And so what, Church was not going to use that point of view? And he was not going to go to the photographic tradition, you know, that had already developed over a generation once he got to Athens in 1869? That's what happened. On the other hand, you know, the conventions of the classical and the sublime landscapes, you know, which these artists wielded, were models for photographers when they started doing landscape to begin with. Okay? So, you know, I would say that, you know, even for this second generation Hudson River School, the authority of those patterns, those conventions, those structures of landscape was what guided them. It is why when artists, especially French artists, wanted to break that vice-like hold that it had on, you know, the perception of landscape, that things began to change, first in France chiefly, but then also in the United States. And that's where your Hudson River School comes in, the name itself, because the younger people painting more in the plein air French mode are looking at these old guys, now they're old, okay, and they're saying, well, they're nothing but a Hudson River School. You know, it was a pejorative term as, you know, first used. But it stuck because it applies. Yeah.